But the biggest things to remember for self-esteem, so parents, educators, therapists, anything, is that it's not so much about performance or achievement and saying, wow, you are worthy because you got an A on this test. It's more, wow, I'm so proud of you because you worked really hard.
Inform, educate, advocate. This is your source for all things early childhood. From nurturing healthy development to overcoming behavioral challenges and recognizing mental health needs. Welcome to Centering Kids, advice from the experts at the Florida Center for Early Childhood. Summer is officially underway here in sunny Sarasota, Florida. And while many of our children are enjoying the break seemingly carefree, feelings of anxiety and worry about starting a new school or moving to a new class may start to arise as the summer wanes. Hi, I'm Marib Favorite, host of Centering Kids, and today we will discuss how we, as parents, can build up our children's self-esteem over the summer so they are confident when they enter the new school year. My guest today is Margaret Ross, a mental health therapist based at Fruitville Elementary School. Welcome, Margaret.
Good morning, Marib. I'm excited to be here.
Margaret is not only a therapist, she also specializes in mindfulness and yoga for children and will be teaching a session at the Florida Center's upcoming Mind Matter Symposium on June 22nd. She's also been on our podcast before and demonstrated a mindfulness exercise she uses with her clients. I remember it well because we were breathing like different animals.
Yes, trying to make mindfulness and breath work and movement all accessible to kids.
It was a lot of fun. So we'll link to that podcast and your upcoming training in our show notes today. However, we are going to be discussing self-esteem. I think it's something that everyone can relate to when starting something new. I know my son is starting kindergarten this year, and he told his preschool teacher that he's afraid he won't make friends at his new school. He was sad that he might not see his preschool friends again. Can you maybe share some of the things that students at Fruitville have told you when it comes to starting a new school?
Sure. So we have kids that are coming and going every year, kids coming to kindergarten from preschool, kids transferring in maybe second or third grade, and then we've got our fifth graders transitioning to middle school. So we have a lot of different transitions that kids are going through throughout the school year, and then, you know, as summer comes to a close at the start of the new school year. A lot of kids' worries are around a new classroom setting, a new teacher. Every time that they have a new person in the classroom, they're having to get used to that teacher's routines, that teacher's expectations. So even just year to year, that creates some anxiety for some kids. Socially, kids that maybe have had social struggles in the past, that's an ongoing worry for them. You know, will I have a class full of my friends again? Will I have to adjust to a new social dynamic? And that's all just within the school itself. And then imagine kids going from fifth grade to sixth grade and all of the challenges that being a middle schooler presents. So they've got a lot on their minds as far as like social dynamics and how they're going to adjust to a new change every single year.
I mean, I just feel for them and their social anxiety. I mean, I know that we all kind of have that even as adults. So I just can remember back to when we were kids and all those feelings. And then if a child has a delay or a disability, it can be even more challenging. I know that my oldest son has a language delay, and so he has a hard time articulating like what he wants to say before he says it. And so I was just so worried that when he was going into elementary school that like he wasn't going to be able to, you know, talk to the people or they would make fun of him. So do you get that a lot, with the delay and the disability?
Yes, for some of the kids that I work with, and kids even at the school that I don't work with that aren't on my caseload, when they have some form of neurodiversity. So for some kids, it could be a physical limitation. For some, it could be, you know, speech delays, a lot of different components, you know, we see with different kids. But I think it is more challenging because sometimes those kids are hyper aware of a difference that they might have. And they're always thinking, how am I going to be accepted? How am I going to be perceived? And so that heightened awareness of maybe ways that they're different, that comes into play. And also, some kids aren't as understanding of kids with, you know, different abilities. You know, kids are up to a certain age inherently egocentric. So, you know, their world kind of revolves around them and their understanding of how things work, how they see the world. And so when they're faced with interacting with kids that might be different than them, sometimes they don't quite know how to respond. And so the kids that have certain struggles might be thinking first of how they're different as opposed to how they're similar to those peers, for example.
Yes. And I think that's a really good point because I remember we did a podcast here on autism, and that was one of the things that the mom or one of the therapists actually had a child with autism. And she was like, I just really want him to like, I want them to have like a friend. I want them to, you know, people to not be so like worried about saying the wrong thing and just come up to my child and ask him a question, you know? So I see what you're saying. And what can we do to kind of build that self-esteem and help with that process?
So the biggest thing with self-esteem and kids is that it's something that begins to develop even in infancy. So it's basically how a person feels about themselves. And when you look at a young child, they're looking at the world and they're saying, do I feel loved and accepted? Do I receive appropriate care and attention? Do I believe that my needs are important enough to be met? And so that's kind of that early childhood stage. And then it continues to develop throughout, you know, school age, adolescence, and then, of course, on into adulthood. But the biggest things to remember for self-esteem, so parents, educators, therapists, anything, is that it's not so much about performance or achievement and saying, wow, you are worthy because you got an A on this test. It's more, wow, I'm so proud of you because you worked really hard. And some of those more intrinsic qualities that aren't as tied to, like I said, performance, perfection. The idea that perfection exists is something that parents don't want to instill in their children. So the biggest thing for self-esteem in kids is they want to feel connected to people. They want to feel included, accepted, valuable for who they are. And then they also want to feel competent and have feelings of self-efficacy in what they do. And so ways that parents can build that is pulling on the child's strengths, giving them choices within reason, giving children reasonable expectations and responsibilities so that they can kind of build those feelings on their own and not have it tied to their performance in any way. So something that parents want to focus on, and like I said, parents, educators, therapists, anybody that works with kids, is really honing in on those intrinsic qualities that kids have and encouraging those more than anything.
And so we're talking more about a relationship between the parent, the caregiver, the teacher, and the child, and not so much meddling in the child's social life.
Yes. So with self-esteem, you know, kids want to feel a sense of connection. And when we're looking at giving praise to a child, for example, You want it to not be contingent on a certain fixed thing, you know? So I will tell you, great job if you get a 90 or above on this, or, you know, I will tell you awesome work only if your room is spotless after I've asked you to clean it. Kind of, you want to scaffold the children. You want to empower them along the way and let them know that their worthiness, their perception of themselves is not dependent on whether they do or do not do something in the correct way or in a timely manner or things like that. So you want to have that social relationship with the kids that communicates to them that they are cared for unconditionally. Obviously, you know, we want to lead them in the proper path, but their worthiness is not contingent on how they perform and how they even compare to peers. So a child that's getting a higher score is not inherently more important or worthy or able to be loved and should feel better about themselves because they are scoring higher, for example. It's really about identifying and playing on each child's individual strengths.
That's awesome. I think that's such a great strategy that parents can work on even over the summer. Like you mentioned, cleaning the room or, you know, scheduling a play date or taking them somewhere where they're going to be interacting with other kids, but also building them up, their self-esteem. So I think that's really important.
And if I can add too, any adult figure in a kid's life, they want to model good self-esteem in themselves as well. And so that's kind of being honest about making mistakes, having compassion for themselves. Children and adults, when they struggle with low self-esteem, they're going to be more critical of themselves. They're going to be more apt to focus on their failures as opposed to kind of pay attention and celebrate the little successes. So low self-esteem is just, it's just detrimental, and parents are the ones that can really model, you know, good self-esteem for kids. They can really say like, oh, you know, mom made a mistake, mom messed up, but that's okay. And show the kids that, hey, you're not going to be perfect. I'm not perfect, and I don't expect that of you.
I love that. So speaking of adults, it just so happens my brother was starting a new job today, and he texted me that he was very nervous, and I was like, you know, you got this, blah, blah, blah. So I think that we could, like you said, build ourselves up to definitely celebrate our successes and, you know, not dwell on what we did wrong, because I know we have a tendency to do that. I know I do.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, managing expectations, you know, so somebody in a new job, there's obviously going to be a learning curve. You know, we don't expect somebody, even a grown person, to come in and perform to 100% first day. And so, you know, also when you give encouragement and give praise, also being realistic. So, you know, not just kind of fluffing somebody up for the sake of doing that, but saying, you know, I know it might have been a hard day. You're meeting all these new people. You're in a new role, new responsibilities. So just go in and try your best, and it'll come even more naturally as the weeks go along. So just being realistic in that feedback too. Yeah, because adults are hard on themselves and they struggle with self-esteem, and you see it too. It's related to performance a lot of the times. It's, you know, am I going to meet the expectation of this new employer? And if you struggle on your first day or your first week or your first month, that doesn't say anything about your worthiness as a person.
Right. Absolutely. But of course, there's also many other environmental things that can affect our self-esteem, maybe trauma or abuse. And I mean, children that are very young can sometimes pick up on things that are going on in the world. We recently had this horrible mass shooting and the whole COVID-19 thing. So what do we tell our children about these happenings? And, you know, does it vary with age, I'm sure?
Yeah, definitely. So when it comes to, you know, to relate these things to self-esteem, a lot of it comes back to that fear. So kids these days, I think even more so now than in the past, have so many things that they're worrying about. And it's not just themselves as a person, how they're going to be successful or feel that they have, you know, achieved what is expected of them, but also all of these other environmental things in the world that they are having to deal with. And so I think when you have these kind of collective traumatic experiences, so whether it be COVID, whether it be school shootings, things like that, it's important to talk to the kids and normalize the emotions that they're experiencing. So again, not contingent on kind of a fixed point, right? Oh, you should feel sad, but only for X amount of time. Or yes, of course you can feel nervous, but now it's time to move along. So you don't want to do that. The kids have the right and the ability to feel what they're feeling, when they're feeling it, and to the extent that's appropriate for them. So normalizing their emotions and their reactions and age appropriate answers to questions, of course. You know, so I work with kids that are very aware of what's going on in the world. You know, they're very aware of how the pandemic has affected them socially. A lot of kids have come back from being remote learners, and maybe they had social difficulties before, and now that's just exacerbated. Some kids have even said they preferred to be remote learners because maybe that social piece of school was anxiety inducing for them. So just recognizing that kids are going to respond to things differently, and there's really no right or wrong in how they're feeling. And so just validating what they're feeling, but then ensuring that they have the feelings of competence to cope with the stressors on their own. And so that comes into self-esteem. So kids that have better self-esteem are more able to cope with life's stressors. So you want to start with the individual child, boost their self-esteem, and then, you know, they go into their classroom and show peers positive self-esteem, and then it just kind of snowballs from there. And then hopefully you've got, you know, a class of resilient kids that can take on the challenges that they are having to face every day. So
that's wonderful. And I understand it, our Mind Matters Symposium, which is sponsored by Gulf Coast Community Foundation and WEDU, will cover some of these issues a little more in depth. The environmental effects of trauma on young children. And if you'd like to learn more, visit floridacentertraining.org. The Institute is offering a 20% discount for all educators and guardian ad litem. Also, every registered attendee will receive a copy of our keynote speaker's new book, The Abecedarian Approach to Healthy Development, which is written by Drs. Craig and Sharon Ramey and based on the findings of their 50-year study. Well, is there anything else that we maybe didn't touch on, Margaret, that you wanted to speak about?
I guess I'd just like to add that I see self-esteem with the kids that I work with as a very underlying factor to so many different things. So having, you know, low self-esteem, really struggling with that piece of who the child is as an individual, you know, they're forming their identity at a young age, they're identifying personal values, and they want their actions to align with their values. That makes them feel very congruent to themselves. And so if we focus on the self-esteem piece of kids, we are likely intervening very early in the possible development of certain mood disorders, anxiety disorders, eating disorders. Self-esteem is linked to those things. And so if we identify how we can build a child's self-esteem, teach them healthy coping skills, teach them to take on challenges, to put in effort, and to keep trying even when they fail. They're building a sense of competence and self-efficacy that they will take with them through the rest of their lives. So focusing on a child's self-esteem from an early age is never a bad thing.
Well, that's awesome. And is there any time when maybe you would recommend like seeing a therapist or, you know, getting help outside the household?
For sure. A lot of kids, even at an elementary level, are, I've noticed, increasingly hard on themselves, increasingly self-critical. And whether that is self-imposed expectations or external expectations by parents or teachers or even society, if you notice that your child is becoming perhaps more withdrawn, irritable, certain symptoms that you're seeing, you know, you're looking at possible symptoms of depression developing and things like that. And typically at the core of that is low self-esteem. Children are afraid of trying things, of exploring new interests, and a lot of it comes back to a fear of failure or a fear of not being good enough or meeting whatever expectation they think is put forth for them. And so you see a lot of kids who are just doubting themselves and avoiding things, and there's a lot of inaction and uncertainty. You know, I've seen kids who answer almost every question with, "I don't know." Even when you share with them, you know, it's an opinion, like it's what you think, it's what you want, it's your ability level, and they just freeze. And, you know, you look to where does that come from, and it's very likely their self-esteem. So,
well, that's really great information, and thank you so much for being here. That concludes today's show. I wanted to remind our listeners that support for Centering Kids comes from listeners like you. The podcast is produced by the Florida Center, a nonprofit agency that supports the healthy development of young children, specializing in those with delays, disabilities, and mental health challenges. Thank you for listening, and we will join us for another show in 2 weeks. Thanks again. Bye. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Centering Kids. You can visit the Florida Center for Early Childhood online at www.thefloridacenter.org to learn more and subscribe to this podcast. Have comments or suggestions for a show topic? Email us at podcast@thefloridacenter.org. Thanks again for joining us for Centering Kids, where early childhood experts give you tips and tools to help center children, foster their healthy development, and build stronger families.